Astroline.
Carbach Brewing Company presents Sports Talk 790 Astroline.
Astroline.
The official off-season show of Astros baseball.
World Series champions!
This is where we talk about your champs. Join the show. Post your questions and comments on social media. Just be sure to hashtag Astroline.
See you later!
Go Astros!
We're Championship City.
Live from Plucker's Wing Bar on Shepherd. Sports Talk 790 Astroline starts now.
And greetings from Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd near downtown Houston. Another edition of Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company. I'm Robert Ford, radio broadcaster for the Astros, and pleased to be joined by our special guest, such a big part of what the Astros did all year. Fifth in the American League in hitting with a .314 average, 13 homers, and some big hits in the postseason. Pleased to be joined by the King of Houston, Josh Reddick. Good to see you.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
Doing great.
Good. Happy to be here.
You've had quite a busy offseason, and I'm sure you've been honored quite a bit. You had a parade in your hometown after the World Series. Has it sunk in yet that you're a world champion?
I think it has. You know, here we are 2 weeks away from spring training, and once the new year kind of hit and everything kind of fell down to where we weren't talking about it, and then you go back and ride around Houston, and for me it's different because I bought a house here, so I'm kind of here most of the time, and you look around, you see billboards everywhere, and you kind of see your picture everywhere. It kind of sets in then every time you see something like that.
And, I mean, just such an amazing year that this Astros team had. And you've been part of playoff teams, although this is the first time you actually got to play in a World Series and win a World Series. Was there a point during the year or during spring training where you thought, hey, this team can do it? This team could win a World Series.
I mean, I thought that the day I signed here. Whenever I got that phone call and we picked up McCann and myself and Chuck that same little weekly span, I felt like we had a really good chance. Felt like we could have used another pitcher, which we took care of. But, you know, with our lineup, I thought we felt like we had a great chance of being something really special, and we proved that. With our lineup, we proved that, and our staff that we had a really good chance. So I knew really early.
Now, let's talk about the process of you coming here. So you came up with Boston, got traded to Oakland, really established yourself in Oakland. Deadline deal to the Dodgers for the latter part of the 2016 season. Yep. Free agent after the season. Signed a four-year deal here. Were the Astros one of the teams that kind of reached out to you early? How did the whole process go down?
Yeah, they were actually the second team to phone in, and I was actually shocked. I didn't think that the Astros were going to be calling at all. I didn't think that they were going to ever at all move Springer over. Or if anything, consider that. I actually honestly thought the Rangers were going to call because I do well there. So I thought that.
Thank goodness they did, by the way.
Thank the Lord, you know, right? I mean, it's just a good thing. But it was very quick. Called once, offered actually a three-year deal, and then we kind of worked out it to get the four-year deal made, and I think it was like November 15th, 16th, we were agreed. So my free agent process was pretty simple and easy, and AJ called me and said, look, you're going to play right field, you're going to play every day, and we're moving George over to center, so welcome. And
there you go.
It.
That's what you want to hear, right, as a player. You want to know you're going to be in the lineup every day.
100%, no matter who's up there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I thought was a real key to this season, I remember talking about this with AJ Hinch in spring training, and you know, I'm not going to get into the numbers or anything, but you're in 2016 with the A's and the Dodgers. You struggled against lefties. You're a left-handed hitter.
Yep.
And I remember talking with AJ. One of the first questions I asked him in spring training, I was in his office when I first got down there right before game started. I said, is Josh Reddick going to be able to play every day? And I remember AJ said, I think so. He said, I think he's like, you know, obviously the really tough lefties probably have to sit him for those games. That's okay. But he's like, he's going to be able to play. Yeah, you don't want to face
Chris Sale. Unless it's in the playoffs.
Right.
Then we're good.
But he said, I think he's going to be able to play every day. He's like, I think we have some good matchups for him. I think he's going to be fine. Was that something that ever crossed your mind at all coming into this season or coming into 2017 thinking about how you could do against lefties so you could play more often?
I had to be better. I knew deep down I had to be better at some point. It wasn't about hitting home runs against him, was just about getting my hits against him. I think that was one of my big successes this year, was not trying to hit the long ball, whether it was a right-handed or a left-handed pitcher, to just go out there and get your knocks. And I think that was one big deal for me. And I knew that in spring training, I wanted to face more lefties than I traditionally had to in the past. And I told AJ earlier on, I said, look, if we have lefties that aren't going to be dominating, I want to get in there just to get my reads on them, whether I go for 3 or 3 for 3. I want to get my looks at them and kind of get used to that, because the right-handed pitcher is just going to fall into place. Those come so naturally and so often that you kind of just fall into that. So I wanted to get more looks at lefties as much as I could.
I've heard left-handed hitters say that even if they struggled against lefties, they still like seeing lefties every now and again because it forces them back into good mechanics, whether it's to keep the shoulder
keeps
in.
It keeps you staying in the box.
So you find that too?
I agree, yeah. I mean, you get lefties that are so amped up to throw their curveball and slider that you can just put their fastball in your back pocket and not worry about that, especially if it's a guy throwing, you know, 93 or below, or I feel like I have a good shot of at least fouling off his fastball to get to his off-speed stuff. So that's kind of been my approach, and it worked out.
It certainly did. We're talking with Astros outfielder Josh Reddick. Hey, don't forget, spring training opener is just 23 days away, February 23rd. That's right, tomorrow's the beginning of February. It's at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. Make your plans to see the World Series champion Houston Astros, West Palm Beach, Florida, for all there is to see. And do visit thepalmbeaches.com. And last year was the Astros' first year down at West Palm Beach. And, you know, you're in that clubhouse. And obviously it can be tough sometimes to kind of get a read for what the chemistry is going to be like in spring training. But I remember, you know, my first few days down there just seeing it looked like you already kind of were starting to fit in with Springer and some of the outfielders. And it seemed like you guys developed a pretty tight bond pretty early.
We did. You know, fortunately for me, it being the very young age of 30 coming into spring training, I was one of the older guys in this clubhouse. So
yeah.
I was pretty respected a little bit because I had quite a few years and a lot of guys on the team, and I don't even have that many years. So I only had to look up to Brian McCann and Beltran in that regard. But, yeah, I fit in really well because I saw how loud everybody was being. And, you know, for me, I'm a very loud person, and I like to let people know what I'm thinking. And it seemed to run well because everybody seems to love it. And as long as I keep it within the certain areas that are okay, I'm all right. And
right.
I tend to do a pretty good job of that. But, yeah, I mean, it was just coming into a new team with that respect was just what I needed, and to feel comfortable to go in there into a new lineup and get plugged right into the heart of it was just something that made me a little more at ease.
Was the transition easier also because playing for the A's all those years, once the Astros moved to the AL West, you saw a lot of the Astros. You saw them at their worst. You saw them as they improved.
I did.
Did that help with the transition also because you had an idea of the roster and had played against them
I think just your interactions. You see us doing pregame stuff out there, talking in center field. I think that was more than enough of what I needed. And getting to know guys like Tuvi and Correa on the base pass. You've seen Tuvi. Tuvi comes up and talks to everybody. So,
yeah.
Excuse me. It was just so much easier just playing against guys in your division that you had seen and kind of been a part of already that made it that much easier as opposed to, say, going from Oakland to L.A. where I went on an off day to a new team and a new league from guys I hadn't even played with before. So definitely a lot easier to come over to these guys.
What was it like watching Jose Altuve every day? Did it surprise you? I mean, you obviously had seen him plenty.
Two words.
Yeah.
One was impressive on the other side. On the same team, frustrating but impressive. Because I can go up there and line out three times and he'll hit one off his shoe and it'll be a single. Or he'll fall down and somebody else will trip and it'll be an infield single. And he gets all those lucky hits. And here we are, Springer and me and all those other guys are lining out.
I think I've heard Springer tell you he's got the magic wand with
he
that
does,
bat.
He does, but Springer
right?
whines about everybody when they get infield hits because he doesn't get them. And he had the second most in the league. But Springer's a whiny baby. I don't know why he's whining. Guy hit 30 homers.
But that's always kind of neat, though, when you watch a guy and then you get to be that guy's teammate, a great player like that. And really, you kind of get insight into how they prepare and what sort of teammate they are.
Overworking. I think Altuve overworks, but it works out for him because I'm kind of a guy that doesn't sit in the cage very long.
Yeah.
But for what Jose can do, it's really fascinating and impressive. And I keep going back to impressive, but that is what it is because he can hit a pitch 3 feet outside into the left center gap and hit one on the inside corner out to right field. So it's just impressive the work he does, the hands he has. But the most thing about Altuve is he's just having fun. I think this game's nice and slow, and he's just having fun.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. We're here at Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd, and you can join in on the conversation. Use the hashtag Astroline on social media if you have questions for our guest tonight, Josh Reddick. And we have questions from the audience as well. Lauren Blackwell, you see her on the Minute Maid Park video board during the regular season. She's here with us. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Robert. How are you?
Good to see you.
Josh, we have a non-baseball question for you.
Okay.
How do you feel about Ronda Rousey joining WWE?
The UFC fighter, yeah?
Yeah, former.
Former
now
UFC
WWE
fighter.
I'm not for it. She needed to make the transition, but I think she needed to make the transition during the match, not after the match. So I think they handled it horribly. Great idea bringing her in, but handled it bad.
Are you going to follow her career and cheer for her?
I don't know if I can cheer for her. I'm a huge Charlotte Flair fan.
Gotcha.
And that was before an attachment with Rick. I met Charlotte a few years ago, and we became pretty close. So it's Got to root for her. I'm not a big fan of Rhonda.
All right. We'll have more from Lauren and our social media manager, Danny Ferris, with questions from the audience and from Twitter here later on in the show. And you're a huge wrestling guy.
Huge.
How? Where did that all, I mean, for most people, starts as a kid, right?
Oh, it did. That's definitely where it started.
Yeah.
But I fell out for a few years, and then I think it was after my first year of pro ball in the minors, I moved in with a buddy of mine that I'd known since middle school, and he watched it. Mm-hmm. Well, he paid the cable bill, so I had to watch it. And then just kind of got stuck back with it and kicked back in, and then went to my first live event and got to know the camera crew, and here we are, right,
so,
back into it.
So you hadn't seen a match live until you were in pro ball.
So I was 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And your favorite wrestler of all time?
Triple H.
Why Triple H?
I loved his walk-up song. He's got a hardcore rock entrance song, and it was just always something I used in the minors. It just gets me fired up and gets me in the zone, and his entrance is pretty sick.
What are these guys like? I know you've gotten to know a few of them over the years. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you've gotten to know some people behind the scenes at WWE as well. What is it like getting to know these guys?
They're very down-to-earth.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to go back there and talk to them out of character because you're so used to seeing them in character, but they're just like you and me. They go back there, and they're human beings, and they have a good time, and they're actually huge fans of baseball players. I went to the Survivor Series that was here in Houston, and I was just sitting there eating back in the food room. They let me go in there and grub on their food, fortunately. And just 10 guys came up, hey, man, congratulations. That's so cool. We were watching. And it was pretty neat because I was seeing guys that I watch and cheer on TV congratulate me on something that I had accomplished and the team had accomplished. So it was pretty neat to see them being fans as well, because a lot of people don't understand that, for me, getting there is a huge release to just be there and watch, and I can get rowdy and get loud.
All right. Somebody comes up to you. You tell them you're a big wrestling fan, and they say to you, oh, come on, man. Wrestling, it's all acting. It's all fake. What's your response?
You're not as good as an athlete as they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not, so sorry.
And what
it's very entertaining. Yes, it may be fake and pre-registered who wins, but the stuff they do is impressive.
It really is. There's some amazing
You got to be an intense and well-in-shape athlete to do what they do.
Absolutely. Remember, if you have some questions for Josh Reddick, you reach out on Twitter, use the hashtag AstroLine. We'll have some questions from Twitter and from the audience coming up in a little bit. Don't forget, you're listening to Astros Radio right here in Houston, our flagship Sports Talk 790 KBME and 99.1 FM HD2, longtime partners and affiliates of the Houston Astros Radio Network. We're going to have more with Astros outfielder, world champion Astros outfielder, Josh Reddick, as AstroLine, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, continues live from Plucker's Wing Bar and on the Houston Astros Radio Network. Reddick is ready. Slightly open stance from the left side. Runners lead off first and second.
I think the more you see, the better off you are as a hitter.
Another 3-2. And Reddick rounds it left side, past the diving Bogarts and into left field. Maven around third. He will score. Springer goes to third. A go-ahead RBI single for Josh Reddick. And the Astros lead it 4-3 in the eighth.
What an at-bat. That is major caliber by Josh Reddick going the other way after seeing so many pitches off one of the best pitchers in baseball, Craig Kimbrell, and stunning the crowd here at Fenway Park.
The eighth pitch was a charm for Josh Reddick. And welcome back to AstroLine, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, coming to you live from Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd near downtown Houston. Robert Ford joined by Astros outfielder Josh Reddick, and we heard one of the highlights, I'm sure for you, but certainly for the Astros this postseason, Josh. Go-ahead RBI single in Game 4 of the ALDS in Boston off of one of the tougher pitchers in baseball, Craig Kimbrell, and Astros took a 4-3 lead, wound up winning that game and clinching a spot in the league championship series against the Yankees, and eight pitch at bat against Craig Kimbrell. And I mean, you were battling. I mean, I can still see some of the pitches you were fouling off there. And you know, Kimbrell's a tough customer.
He's not easy.
No. What was kind of your mindset going into that at bat, and then just as the at bat progressed?
I've faced Craig a few times in the past, and I've had really good at bats, really good contact off him. I seem to guess what pitch he's throwing every time, and that time of the game, you know, you're locked in as best as you can be. It's a tied game, and you're just trying to get a pitch you can get. And I knew I was getting a first-pitch fastball, and I wasn't really known for first-pitch fastball hitting this year, so I tried to jump on that and just couldn't get the pitch I wanted after that, so I just tried to foul off as much as I can. And didn't think they were going to throw me a slider with what happened the day before, you know, the homer I hit off Kelly that got caught. We won't talk about that day, but I felt like that they weren't going to throw that, especially off a high-velocity guy. So I felt like if I stayed on the fastball, I was going to be just fine until I got a pitch I can handle. He left one down to where I could actually get it in play, and just tried to shoot it. Unfortunately, the guys were on the move because with the short porch at Fenway, I don't think it would have happened without a 3-2 count. But fortunately, we had Cam out there and a couple of fast guys.
Yeah, made all the difference in the world. And, I mean, that game was crazy. You know, the Astros go down. Chris Sale comes in. I mean, just completely shutting the door. Then Bregman hits the home run to tie it. And that just seemed to breathe life into the team.
That was all we needed. It felt like that was all we needed. That one big knock to get us going and pick the boys back up and kind of get us rowdy again to where, okay, we'll tie this game. If we can get to Chris Sale, we're going to get anybody. We're not going to let him worry about getting anybody else but Chris Sale. Worry about that when the time comes because we know they're not going to use him the whole time. They got to save him for possible game five.
Right.
Get back to him, and we're going to beat their bullpens. I think that was one thing that really picked us up with Breggs. Had a great postseason the whole time, but probably no swing bigger than that one.
Yeah. I mean, he came up with – I mean, homer twice off of Chris Sale in the division series. I mean, it seems like – I mean, you look at Bregman, and you look at how young he is, and the big hits he came up with all season and also in the postseason. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
It is. What that kid can do on the baseball field is pretty special at such a young age. And, you know, we hope that we could have that in every 22-year-old, but it's just not that fortunate for us.
Yeah.
But he works hard. He's got a great crew around him. He sits around Correa and Altuve and just dissects and takes in everything those guys tell him. And it makes him a better player. And as long as we can keep him playing hard and keeping his head right, because Alex has a big head. He's that young college kid who's got a big head, but it keeps him going, makes him play the game the right way. And as long as we can keep him doing that, he'll be fine.
All right, we have some questions for Josh Reddick on Twitter. We're joined now by Danny Ferris, social media manager for the Astros. How's it going, Danny?
Going well. We're streaming this right now on Facebook, and we're getting a lot of comments, a lot of questions. We're actually getting some family love from you right now. Cheryl says hello.
My mother, of course. Hi, Mom. Always.
We also have Danielle that says, who do you like better, me or our brother? So we're getting a lot of Reddick action up in here.
Oh, Lord, my younger sister.
This is the most listened to Astroline in Effingham County, Georgia, ever.
Ever. Ever. I'm not picking favorites, Danielle. I can't do that.
But one thing I want to talk about was last night on your flight, you did a little Twitter Q&A.
I did.
So I just wanted to call out a couple of them that I thought were funny and wanted to ask you about. So one of them asked, how far can you punt a football? You said 50-plus.
50-plus.
No problem?
No problem. Yep.
You punted in high school?
I didn't play football at all.
Okay.
My dad wouldn't let me. But I played flag football a little bit and just messing around, kicking a football, growing up. I could punt it pretty well.
Wow.
Another one that popped out to me was somebody asked you, favorite thing to do in the Houston area? You said beat strangers at cornhole. How does that work out? You just walk out and
I mean,
play?
Well, you know, in season, if you need to go out and have a cocktail after a win, you know, there's plenty of places with bags and cornhole. So I'm a proud Southern Georgia boy who's pretty good at it, so I've taken on all challengers. I've yet to lose. So bring it.
I love it. And the last thing I'll ask you about the Twitter Q&A was somebody asked you the coolest thing to do in the offseason. You said Hawaii, obviously, but you were there for the missile alert.
I was there for the missile scare. Yeah, it was a tough week. You know, the day we landed, my Bulldogs lost the national championship, and then that happened a few days later. So it was as exciting as that trip was. Had a scare, and but what a gorgeous place. Gorgeous place. Played some golf out there. Great golf courses off the ocean and so many touristy things to do.
Very cool.
All right. Thanks, Danny. And you mentioned you're a big University of Georgia fan from Georgia. You're wearing your UGA hat as we speak. And, I mean, man, what a season they had. I mean, obviously, you came up a little short. But, I mean, to beat Oklahoma, come from behind, beat them in overtime in the semifinal. And, and that game against Alabama, I mean, that's one people won't forget for a long time.
No, it won't. Definitely two of the greatest playoff games I think this world has seen. And couldn't be more prouder of the boys. You know, I was obviously heartbroken when they lost, but what a great program they've built there in the last 2 years with Kirby Smart coming over and doing what they can do, because Georgia hasn't been able to win those big games like we need them to. And he's done great with the classes they have coming in with those recruits. They're going to be great for a few years. My only regret that I wasn't there for it. You know, maybe if I'd have been there, they'd have won. That could have been the difference maker. But would have been a great way to end the year. Astros win, Bulldogs win. We're set.
That was a hot ticket, too, because that game was in Atlanta. I mean, Georgia, Alabama, plenty of fans. The prices I was hearing about were astronomical.
Well, if I hadn't played in Hawaii 3 months prior,
you'd
have bet your butt I'd have been there.
You would have been there.
I'd have been there on the sidelines, no matter what the cost.
So were you played at junior college, baseball junior college, before you got drafted by the Red Sox. Did you have a chance to play at UGA?
I got a story for you.
Okay.
This is a good one.
All right.
For all those listening who don't think they're, you know, they keep getting told they're not good enough, I went for a visit when I was in junior college to Georgia, put on a pretty good batting practice show, had a great showing. The head coach comes up to me and goes, you're just not a player we're looking for. You're not good enough to be a Bulldog.
Wow.
I was like, oh, okay. So I went and won College Player of the Year, Junior College Player of the Year, All-American, blah, blah, blah. Basically everything you can win in a national championship, minus that. Starts calling me, telling me he wants me to come back. I play in a summer wooden bat league, end up signing late to go play pro ball. Well, fate has it, the day I sign, he calls.
The day you sign with the Red
Sox?
The
day I sign with Boston, okay. Calls me and says, hey, I wanted to see if you got any consideration about coming to Georgia. I said, yeah, I've given it a lot of thought. It's not too good for your team. I'm going to play pro ball. You can kiss my you-know-what and hung up on him. Hung up on him. He got fired the next year. Not because of that, but because of illegal recruiting. But, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You had Gordon Beckham or Josh Reddick. You missed on that one. But it worked out. I'm not complaining. I got to the big leagues at a young age, so to heck with them. I'll keep rooting on their football team.
And, I mean, you grew up in the Savannah, Georgia area, and if I have this right, if I remember the story right, you got cut from your middle school baseball team?
Twice.
Seventh grade, eighth grade?
Seventh and eighth grade, yep.
But you kept at it?
Kept at it. I made the ninth grade team, junior varsity. I wasn't playing. I was playing a rec ball league with my dad who was coaching.
Uh-huh.
So one Saturday I went to the game for my dad at like 10. We had a baseball game at noon at the high school. My dad said, heck with this. You're winning. We got to play another one at 1. You're staying here.
Uh-huh.
Got kicked off. That was a whole different ordeal. Next year, made it. Got called up to varsity, and the head coach wanted me to come up in a game in jeans and a T-shirt, not even dressed. I said, well, I'm done with you. I'm out. And ever since then, it's just been a roller coaster ever since we got a new coach.
Yeah.
So it was a whole different story. My coach came in my junior year, my senior year. We're still good buddies this day, and whole different story. That's when I got moved to shortstop to right field, too. So maybe that was the move I needed.
So you had been a shortstop before playing outfield?
I missed the infield every day. When I played first base in Oakland this year, I was the happiest person on the planet.
You were one of a few people lobbying to play first base.
I was the only one.
Were you the only one?
I mean, I was the only guy who would have been the logical choice. I think, we had Beltran come out because I came in for Beltran. McCann was out.
Right.
And then it was Correa that got hit. So there was really no other. It was right. Either me, Norrie, or
Was it Gattis in the picture?
Gattis was catching.
That's right.
We had
that's
to have
right.
him catching.
That's right.
I can't remember who the third guy was, and I came in. I said, AJ, I'm going to first. You sure? Yep. Give me a glove. And I went out there, and sure enough, perfect inning.
So you missed the action in the infield?
I don't know if I could play first. I missed shortstop second. There's a little more reaction time for me because that's a little close from where I'm used to now. But I would give anything to end my career as a first baseman or something like that, just to be that close. Because there's people to talk to in the infield. In the outfield, I got nothing to do but listen to idiot fans say I suck for 9 innings.
What visiting ballpark is the roughest on you in terms of the opposing fans?
Yankees.
Okay, I think that's pretty universal.
We won't even say what they say at Yankee Stadium, because what they were saying in the championship series is pretty vulgar and over the line.
I remember when the Astros won the wild card game in 2015, Dallas Keuchel started that game in New York, and post game celebration. And we got to talk about your post game celebration after wins too here coming up in a little bit. But we're interviewing players and coaches down in the clubhouse, me and Steve Sparks, and Sparky gets Brent Strom on, and Stromy was still fired up about the vitriol fans at Yankee Stadium were giving Dallas Keuchel when he was warming up before the game.
I don't doubt it.
I mean, he was still upset about it. And then I remember seeing him after the game when I got down to the bus when we were leaving to go to Kansas City. And he was still upset about it.
Yeah.
Like, he was that mad. I'm like, Stromy, you've been in a lot of ballparks. You've heard a lot. He's like, I've never heard anything like that.
It's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they go and they get in. They Google your name and they get to your mother, your father, everything. They don't care. They don't hold back. And what gets me is the security staff is just standing there letting it happen. And nobody says anything, but that's just karma. You come out, you beat us 3 at your place, and we beat you, and you move on and go home.
Yeah, you got the ultimate revenge against the Yankees.
Exactly.
And played well there, won 3 out of 4 during the regular season,
out of 4,
too.
Yep. So we get to go back there, and I can just turn around to the right field bleachers and do that. Just like when we go back to L.A.
Do you ever have to resist the temptation to react to the fans or say anything?
Yeah. All the time. I've seen too many people go down for stupid little gestures,
right.
Just even the finger. Everybody does it. Everybody wants to do it. And as much as we want to do it to those fans out there, you just can't because there's way too many cameras. And you don't want to be that guy.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody's got their cell phone out. They're waiting for you to react.
Not just that. I mean, there's too many TV cameras around to catch everything. It's just you got 12 cameras in a baseball game in the postseason, and there's a good chance one of them's on every player. So you got to be smart and mouth something to them. I don't know. Just always like, if they're ragging me, always like to get the third out of the inning, turn around, pump fake, and just put it in my pocket and go.
And
that makes them mad more than anything. So just get under their skin best you can.
Hey, folks, 2018 Astros season tickets are still on sale. Enjoy some of the best seats at Minute Maid Park. Save money and receive great benefits throughout the season. Call 1-877-9-ASTROS or visit astros.com/season tickets to get your seats today. We'll have more with Astros outfielder Josh Reddick as Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, live from Plucker's Wing Bar, continues on the Houston Astros Radio Network. 3-2. And Kipnis lifts this one pretty well and pretty deep to center. Reddick is going back on the warning track. He leaps at the wall, and he caught it! Oh, my goodness. Josh Reddick took a home run away from Jason Kipnis, and there's one out.
Oh, how about Josh Reddick timing that one perfectly? Second game in center field all year long. Played it perfectly. It stole a home run away from Jason Kipnis as he points at Keuchel after Keuchel acknowledges a game-saving run right there.
And welcome back to Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, coming to you live from Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd near downtown Houston, talking with the man who made that great catch, Astros outfielder Josh Reddick. And that was pretty early in the year. That was in Cleveland. Robbed that home run from Jason Kipnis. And Astros had some injuries at that point, and so you wound up moving to center field. What's more fun for you, hitting a home run
robbing
a home run?
Robbing one, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
They don't come along as often, so there's a much better feeling.
Much better feeling.
Yes.
So going back for that ball, did you have a pretty good idea? You had a shot?
I thought I had a good chance at it.
Yeah.
And I remember, if I remember right, I kind of changed direction at the last second, so I thought I'd overrun it. But fortunately, it hung up just enough for me, and I could jump just enough to get up there. But I had a good chance, I feel like, because, you know, with Dallas and a lefty, you kind of play on the pull side because he doesn't throw that hard, and that two-seamer coming in, so you try to do that. But
right.
Just was at the right place at the right time, fortunately.
Certainly. Good time to be playing center field. One of six games you started out there all year.
I miss center field so much.
Do you?
It's so much easier than right. George has it so easy now.
Well, you have more room than Roman center. You don't have to worry about the wall as much.
Enough.
Well, I'm saying that's one of the reasons you like
right.
it, I assume,
yes.
right?
Well, you get a better read off the bat. You
yeah.
can see the ball, the trajectory, and your reaction time is usually better.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm good with right field. That short run from the dugout to right at home 81 times a year is really nice.
Yeah.
As in, you know, when I was in Oakland, I had to run 300 feet every time back and forth. So it's a pretty nice run, so I'll stick to right.
I saw something during the season that if you're playing right field as a home player in Oakland, or if you're playing left field as a visiting player, because visiting dugouts on the first base side in Oakland, over the course of a 9-inning game, you're going to run something like 5 miles,
five
I think
plus
it is.
Miles, yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's because that's how much foul territory they have.
Yep.
There.
I'd average probably five miles a night just jogging back and forth.
Get your steps in.
And our video room was upstairs in the clubhouse, so you know how it works in the visiting side. It's the same
right.
on the other side. All the way up some stairs and then all the way back to the video room. So it's a constant video sprinting. If I was like wanted to go watch video and I was up six that inning, I had to sprint up, watch a batter, sprint right back down.
Wow.
So, but I got my work in. Maybe that's why my legs are holding up pretty good, knock on wood.
All right, we had to talk about, you know, obviously it's always exciting when your team wins and clinches something, whether it's a division, whether it's a playoff spot, whether it's you're moving on to the next round of the postseason, and obviously the ultimate win in the World Series. And for every one of the Astros clinching celebrations, and this goes back to your days in Oakland, you had the same outfit, that American flag. Is it a Speedo?
It is a Speedo, yes. It's not a bikini like everybody says it was. It's a Speedo. Sparky always called it a bikini. It was a true American flag Speedo.
So, first of all, how did this all start with the American flag Speedo in celebrations?
I just saw it on Amazon one day. And then, you know, I've got American flag socks. I've got American flag underwear. I've got a lot of American flag attire
okay.
from head to toe. And I saw this, and I was like, you know what? That'll be a great item to have for the hot tub, for the whirlpool of the fields every day, you know, kind
yeah.
of save some sliders. And then
uh-huh.
I was struggling a little bit at one point and wore it over my sliders one game and turned things around.
This is
and
when
here
you're
we
in
are.
Oakland.
Yep, turned things around. Yeah, I started wearing it under my uniform and got a couple of hits that night after struggling. So you know how we are. We don't change stuff if it works. And then
so,
it just kind of came around in celebration that I should have just wear that and pretty much nothing else.
And that's what you did.
Got us to the World Series, so
if
it's working, you don't switch it up.
No, definitely
so it's
not.
It's definitely got a lot of champagne and beer in it in the last 3 years, so it's definitely a winner.
So it was the fifth time you went to the postseason this year.
Mm-hmm.
You went 3 years in a row with Oakland, and they won the two division titles and went to the wild card game the other year. You went with the Dodgers in 2016, And you were also on the Red Sox team your first year that you came up, 2009, played 27 games for that team.
Yep.
You didn't play in the postseason, but you were on that team that went to the postseason. Do you see any common threads between postseason teams and the team you had with the Astros, things that you don't necessarily see on teams that don't get there?
Yeah, you pick up on things like, let's go to Oakland, for example. We got Verlandered twice in game 5 2 years in a row, and it was just because we didn't have, I guess, the lineup to match up against a guy like that, because we
right.
didn't. You know, we had to go against Scherzer and Verlander in 1-2-4-5, basically. So we had to
right.
beat two of the best pitchers, basically, in the game twice, and we didn't have the lineup to do it. Granted, we could have done it, but in that setting, we were such a young team, and those guys had so much experience, and I think it helped them out a lot more because you had Miggy, Prince Fielder,
right.
Torrey Hunter, all these guys that were just so much more experienced than we were. I think that helped them out. And then you look at, say, our 14 year, the wild card game, which is probably the best game minus this past World Series.
Yeah.
Probably the best playoff game ever, that a game that we should have won, and we didn't have the pitching. We didn't have a bullpen that could get it done. We couldn't throw a guy out stealing a base because they had seven of them.
That's right.
Anyway, so you look back at our team, and you look back at going from beginning and say, okay, they got the lineup, they've got the pitching staff, but they need that one guy who can get them over the edge, and that was what we needed in JV to get us past that. And I think that was the one step we had from going to magnificent to an elite team that didn't need to be, that couldn't, you know, be beaten. And I think that was one thing we needed to do and get right, because we had the lineup, like I said, we had the bullpen to handle it. We just needed that one guy to help get us over the edge.
So July 31st, non-waiver trade deadline comes and goes. Astros get Francisco Liriano, who had been starting for the Blue Jays, a pitch out of the bullpen as a lefty. Don't really make a big splash at that point. Of course, a lot was made out of the comments that Dallas Keuchel made publicly to the media. Of course, you know, fans feel one way.
Yep.
What was the feeling in the clubhouse? Because, I mean, I'd imagine at one point, obviously, you want to get another pitcher.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that's what the Astros needed, get you over the hump, especially since a lot of the starters were on the DL this past year. But
yep.
But by the same token, you also have to kind of feel like, hey, these are my guys, and you don't want
right.
you still want to show support to your
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, it's just kind of hit or miss depending on how you take it. And I think
yeah.
I think the way Dallas handled it was probably the best he could. And you know,
mm-hmm.
he spoke for a lot of us on the team, because I think deep down we all knew that we needed that left-handed specialist, and you know, we felt like we were on a pretty good track to get some guys that were going to put us over that hump. And when it didn't happen, I think we were just so disappointed and upset that we kind of just let it fly. But you know, we're grown-ups. We got to let people know how we're feeling, too. You know, and
yeah.
it's not like we're bashing other teammates. We just know that we wanted to give our team the best chance we could to win, and we knew if we got one of those guys, that was going to give us that chance. And why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want to make your team better to be a team that can be reckoned with? So I don't see why people make such a big deal about something like that, comments like that, because we're
right.
speaking the truth about how we want to feel and how we want to have our team right. And I don't think it was directed at anybody that we didn't trust in them, because we do. We trust every guy that puts on that Astro uniform for us every day. And we're going to bust our butt for him. But if you can make your team better any day by making moves like that, I think you should be able to do that.
And the Astros did. August 31st.
The very last second.
Very
surprised
last second. 2 seconds to spare. Get Justin Verlander.
Yep.
Where were you? Were you following along? I know you're on Twitter.
I was.
Were you following along?
I was on ESPN News that night, following along, just hoping and reading every Twitter feed I could. Trying to help out as much as possible, and then I heard it didn't happen. Everybody here probably saw my tweet about the Major League base, you know, Major League reference. Well, you know, there's only
oh, yeah,
one thing
right.
left to do.
That's right.
And then as soon as I think I hit the tweet button, it happened. So I kind of just went back and retracted my statement and put, I think it was the Dumb and Dumber tweet, and you know, the totally redeemed
oh,
yourself
yeah.
tweet. So I think I tagged that into it. So it was definitely a lot of fun. I was sitting on my couch with a buddy of mine, and we were watching pretty intently. So we. Once it happened, we celebrated pretty loudly.
And you mentioned you guys went up against Verlander a couple of different years in
yep.
the division series when he was with Detroit and you were with Oakland. So
yep.
you got to face him in some pressure-packed games and
yeah.
saw how he performed. And we were talking about Altuve earlier, about how watching him on the other side, then getting to play with him. What was it like getting to know Verlander or getting to play behind Verlander?
A lot different than the way I portrayed him as an opponent, because as an opponent, I didn't really like the guy
uh-huh.
because of the way he acted. But that just shows me from playing with him now, that's the Verlander that he is on the mound. Because off the mound, Justin Verlander is one of the coolest guys I've ever met in this game. Because, one, he's all about teaching everybody. He's not just teaching pitchers. He's teaching me. He's teaching George Springer. He's teaching Altuve. He's teaching all these young guys different aspects of the game. But then again, you know, when things get serious, he's like, hey, like you saw in the game, was it game two?
Oh,
World
yeah.
Series when he came
right.
back out. He was just, hey, guys, we're going to win this game, and we're going to get out there, and we're going to be you know, we're going to take this thing back 1-1. It's just those little things that certain people don't know when to step up. Like for me, I wouldn't have known to come in and yell like that to some certain degree. I was too focused on trying to talk to somebody else or just trying to get my mind right, where he, as opposed to him, he comes out and he focuses on everybody to get us right, not get down on ourselves. So he knew deep down what he needed to do, and he put that captain on his chest real quick.
He certainly did. And it can be tough sometimes, I think, for a starting pitcher to assert themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you pitch every fifth day, you know, starters, you know, once you're out after six innings, however many innings it is, a lot of guys are back in the clubhouse. They're getting treatment. They're, you know, doing their whole post-start routine. I don't think there are too many guys who could have pulled off what he did. Would you agree to that?
I would, and it's not about people going, I think, the World Series. Just once they came out, they didn't really go very far, because in the tunnel we didn't have to go very far from the
right.
The video room, so we were right there underneath. But, he just wants to win so bad.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made him a great fit in for this team, because we all wanted to win so bad that he just jumped on the train and was so excited about being with a winning team again and had a good shot at being the team that could win it all, that I think that put him on a whole other level than Justin Verlander normally had been.
Yeah, it was certainly a lot of fun watching Justin Verlander pitch for the Astros at the end of the regular season and the postseason. Hey, you can find all the Astros postseason and World Series championship merchandise by visiting the Astros team's store. Purchase customized jerseys, Astros gear, hats, and more. Visit Astros.com/team store to see what's available today. We'll have more with Astros outfielder Josh Reddick as Astroline, presented by Carbach Brewing Company, continues live from Plucker's Wing Bar and on the Houston Astros Radio Network.
Houston, we don't have a problem. We got a championship.
And now we head out to the video screen, where we are joined by WWE legend, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Houston, let's play ball.
Woo!
And Reddick hits it high in the air and deep to right field. Romine is looking up. See you later! A go-ahead three-run home run for Josh Reddick. And the Astros lead it 6-5.
Much to the dismay of the fans here in Detroit.
Josh Reddick, who has driven in 5 tonight. And welcome back. Final segment of Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company, coming to you live from Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd. Hey, hope you can join us for our next Astroline broadcast. It will be next Thursday, February 8th. I'll be hosting that one, the guest to be announced, but hope to see you out here at Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 Shepherd, next Thursday for our next edition of Astroline. Joined this week by Astros outfielder Josh Reddick. And, you know, whenever I always knew how many Astros fans were in the ballpark when the Astros were on the road. When you came to the plate, because I could tell by the number amount of woos I'd hear in the stands. And you know, we talked earlier, big wrestling guy. Early in the season, you went with Ric Flair's walk-up song, which has the woo in it, which he made famous, and you've brought to Houston. And we just heard the Ric Flair did the woo before one of the World Series games on the Minute Maid Park video board. Did you have any idea that would kind of take a life of its own after you decided to use that?
No idea.
Yeah.
I had no clue. And it all came to me in game 3 of the year when Springer hit that walk-off in the 13th. And around the 11th and 12th, it was like a wrestling event. And all you heard was about 15 people back and forth the stadium wooing back and forth. For those that don't know, when you go to a wrestling event, before the show starts, it's just the whole arena wooing.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the show to start. So that was kind of neat for me. So I was like, I'm going to run off with this to see if it takes anything. And if not, then move on. And then now we're in Houston. So it definitely picked up a lot more than I thought for me. I'm a huge walk-up song guy. So
yeah.
For me to keep one for longer than a month and a half was a pretty pretty good standard for me. It's not really often that happens for me. So for me to even keep one all year was something just unheard of.
Although when you were in Oakland, you were known for Careless Whisper
by Wham. I only had that one for like 2.5-3 months, though.
Really?
So I think I started using that in like July.
Okay.
And then I ran it out for the rest of the year. But this one was the earliest I've ever started with one.
And I thought it was really neat. First time Astros went back to Oakland was the first time you'd been there since they had traded you away in 2016. And first time you came up, you got a nice ovation. You're really popular with, you know, they have a group of fans at the Oakland Coliseum that are always out there in right field. And they're there every game and they're diehards. And, you know, they don't always draw well in Oakland, but the people who show up there,
Never.
They're into it.
They are. The people that do show up are into it big time. And You know, they may not average as many as the next stadium, but those guys on right, they're diehard fans. They're crazy. They got some great heckling, and Lord, if their drums aren't annoying. Their drums are annoying, and I'll tell that to their face. I don't care.
And but the first time you came up in Oakland as a visiting player after they traded you away with the Astros, they played Careless Whisper, which I thought was a really
good touch. I had a good feeling they were going to do that because of the reception that it did get when I had it when I was there. But what a great feeling to go back to a team that you spent so much time with and made a name for yourself. And, you know, as much as we would all like to have that sellout ovation, it was still cool whether there was 200 or 2,000 there. It was still a cool feeling to get the warm welcome back that I did receive, and then, of course, beat the crap out of them that night, too. So anytime you can beat your former team, it's going to be something special. But it was good to see them come back and kind of give me that welcome.
Yeah, really, really neat. Just shows the sort of impact you had while you were there. And you know, we talked earlier, you're a Georgia boy from Savannah area, Effingham County, Georgia.
Effingham, yep.
And this past December, pretty cool moment. They had a little parade.
They did.
To honor you, world champion from Georgia. That was pretty neat.
It's a small town.
Yeah.
A very small town where I'm from. So they don't get a whole lot of action like that much ever. So it was pretty cool. The recreation guy who's been there for 50 plus years, Clarence Morgan, who actually just had a new complex named after him, that where my foundation and I are helping actually fund a new field, who's done so much for that county. He actually set all that up, so very thankful for what he does, not only for myself but for that county. But it was cool to have just a little mini parade and kind of go down the streets of my small town and see all the people that did come out and enjoy that day. But they do so much for me that I can't thank them enough. That they give me all kinds of stuff that I can't even ask for. So now, it's pretty special.
And as you mentioned, fundraiser for your foundation as well. So what your foundation, what does it look to help?
Well, it's just the Josh Reddick Foundation. It's based in my hometown. We raise funds for anything from police, fire, animal shelters, education. Mm-hmm. I give scholarships every year to the high school between a male and female athlete at both high schools. So we kick out money to help them out every year. So we're trying to give back as much as possible. We have a home run derby every year, a concert, and we just incorporated a 5K this year. So we're kind of just trying to raise as much money as we can in a short time to not necessarily make it perfect, but make the county a little bit better than it already is. So anytime we can help and you can help out with the future generation, that's what it's all about.
Are you the most famous person from Effingham County, Georgia?
It's if I had to say now, yes.
Uh-huh.
But there is a country performing artist from there who doesn't come back. And for those who know Billy Currington's name,
sure,
he is from Rinkin, Georgia, which is in Effingham, and has not done a thing for Effingham County, so nobody likes him, so I win.
That's got to be neat for you, though, to go back and to give back to a community that gave you so much.
It is. You know, I mean, that's home. That's where I got my start. That's where I grew up playing. So it was always my goal and my dream to come back and, one, have a field there to where it could be used for kids in that age group, but not only just be able to come back and be welcomed and loved the way I am there, because, you know, before I left, I was a nobody. My family and nobody is just a small town where you just, hey, everybody knows everybody now. It's, we got this Josh Reddick guy who comes back for some reason to Effingham County. People just don't understand. Why do you come back? I was like, you don't get it. It's home for me.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people from Effingham get out a whole lot. So that could be a different thing for them, too. Well, why did you come back? There's nothing here. I said, yeah, it's here. I'm here for 2 months of the season. This is something for me to come back. My whole family's here. My friends are here. So it makes sense for me to come back here. But I love it there. It's, you know, got my favorite restaurant there that I go to 6 times I'm there every week. So it's one of my special places.
What do you get?
It's called the Shell House.
Okay.
And it's a kind of like a seafood restaurant. Best crab legs you can ever have.
Really?
And that's my favorite food. Crab legs are my favorite food. So they've got the best I've ever had.
So the Shell House, what town?
It's in Savannah.
Actually
in Savannah off 95 and 204. Free PR for y'all that are listening back home.
There you go. So when are they putting up the hometown of Josh Reddick sign and on the road that leads into your hometown?
That's actually a good question, because I've been trying to get one for 6 years there, and they finally put one in the motion to get one this year. So finally,
okay,
I can get one. But Billy Currington got one as soon as his first number one made it. So I'm kind of upset at my council.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get one. And his is about this big, so hopefully mine will be that big.
A little bigger.
A little bigger, I hope.
Maybe it'll be in front of his.
It should be. If it was up to me, I'd have ran his over with my pickup truck by now. But that probably wouldn't go very well.
But, I mean, that's really cool that you give back to your community. And, you know, you have a chance to get down there. And I always think it's neat. I mean, I think that's one of the neat things about being from a small town, is mm-hmm. that when you do something like this, hey, the folks are like, hey, let's have a parade.
They come out.
They do
come out, because it's something they don't get to witness very often. You know, it's a dry county, so if you want to do something alcoholic beverage-wise, you got to leave the county. But it's just one of those things where, you don't get a whole something like that a whole lot, and we can get out of the house. It's always something they can enjoy and I enjoy doing it for him because you don't see stuff like that come from my hometown.
Well, Josh Reddick, always good to see you. I'll see you soon here at spring training. He'll be here before you know it. I know you're going to be heading down pretty soon. But thanks for joining us. So glad that you're a part of the Astros. So glad you came here. I enjoyed watching you.
Yep.
Only so much, though, when you were with the Oakland A's.
I know. He used to beat a few guys pretty bad.
Yes. And I think you'd robbed a few hits from George Springer, too.
And
Springer's reminded me. And Altuve, as Springer's reminded me a few times.
Just remind Springer any time that he knows not to run on me now because he got thrown out of third play way back and he knows not to run on me.
But so good you're here. So glad you're going to be here for a little while. And, again, thanks for coming out. And glad you're a member of the world champion Houston Astros.
Same here. I'm happy to be here and very fortunate to be here.
All right. Josh Reddick, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody.
And that'll just about do it for this edition of Astro Line. I'd like to thank all who made tonight's broadcast possible. Studio producers Bob Elliott, producer engineer Matt Bolt. I'd like to thank Lauren Blackwell, social media manager Danny Ferris as well. All the great people here at Pluckers, all the great people with Carbach Brewing Company as well. Next Astroline, next Thursday, 6 o'clock, next Thursday, February the 8th, right here at Pluckers Wing Bar. Certainly hope you can join us. I'm Robert Fort saying so long. You've been listening to Astroline presented by Carbach Brewing Company, live from Pluckers Wing Bar.
Listening to Sports Talk 790 Astroline, the Astros' official off-season show, presented by Carbach Brewing Company.
Astroline.
Hear your world champion Houston Astros go for the repeat on Sports Talk 790, home of the Stros.